Hi, everyone. It's Ryan Hoover, your host of Product Hunt Radio, where I'm joined by the founders, investors, and makers that are shaping the future of tech. Today, I'm hosting Tiffany Zong and Drake Rehfeld at my place in San Francisco. On this episode, I feel old. Both Drake and Tiffany are about a decade younger than me, and today they're going to school me on all things Gen Z. I met Tiffany, aka Gen Z Whisperer, when she was in high school. She actually interned at Product Hunt briefly while in school and before entering the world of venture capital. Today, she's the CEO of Zebra Intelligence, a startup helping companies better understand the teen audience, and an investor out of her own fund, Pineapple Capital. Drake is the CEO of Splish, a recent Y Combinator-backed company building pretty cool social apps designed to make the internet more fun. Previously, he worked at Team 10 and was one of the youngest hires at Snapchat. On today's show, we talk about Instagram's IGTV, the HQ trivia of music, and the wide world of digital celebrities. But before I jump in, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors. We'd like to thank Airtable for making the show possible. I've been speaking with a diverse mix of companies that use Airtable to build their business, including Austin Allred, co-founder of Lambda School.
Tell me more about Lambda School. What are you doing there?
We train people to be software engineers and data scientists in live online classes. But we do it for free in exchange for a share of people's future income for a couple of years. The goal is to get access to world-class education to everybody.
If you were to choose one word to describe Airtable, what would that word be?
Oh man, I would say fun.
Usually don't hear people describe anything that resembles a spreadsheet as fun.
Definitely not. I honestly wonder if sometimes people don't realize how incredible the tech under the hood must be to make all this work. I mean, it's astounding that you just have a database that loads in the cloud seamlessly and quickly. That engineering team should win awards. It's pretty incredible.
You can get $50 off Airtable by visiting airtable.com/producthunt. We're happy to have Intercom, a tool we've used since the beginning of Product Hunt, sponsor the show. Intercom has evolved quite a bit since we started using it in 2014. Many people are familiar with Intercom's customer support tooling, but really it's so much more. They recently introduced an app store, featuring hundreds of integrations with other services including Slack, Zoom, MailChimp, Stripe, and others. There's even a Product Hunt app available as well. One of our favorite integrations comes from Typeform, which allows you to present a fully interactive survey to your users directly on-site. And with Intercom targeting, you can even choose who to gather feedback from, based on their location, activity, company attributes, and more. Visit intercom.com to give it a try. Hey everybody, it's Ryan. I'm here with two younger entrepreneurs, Drake, not the Drake that you might be thinking of, and Tiffany Zong. First, before we jump in, maybe you guys want to do a little intro. Drake, what are you working on?
So I'm co-founder of Splish App, which is a mobile photo sharing app with live filters and animated effects. So it's kind of one step past the normal filters you see make things move. Before that, I worked at Team 10 running engineering over there with Jake Paul and the gang. And then I also spent some time at Snapchat.
Nice. That's interesting. Team 10 must have been as an engineer working in tech for a crazy crew like that. What was that like?
It was a weird intersection of like the media world and the tech world. It was cool that we got to kind of run in the context of resources and media where you move pretty quickly. You talk to a lot of, you know, partnerships, biz dev type feeling meetings, but then you're building products for people. And so there's a little bit easier iteration cycle where you can put something in people's hands really quickly because you have the audience.
Which is the biggest problem for almost everyone building a product is getting users and getting attention. It's tough. And then Tiffany, I've known you for a little while. We met through Twitter?
I think so.
Yeah. I think you met everybody you know through Twitter, it feels like.
I did. This is the only way I met people.
Yeah. So what's your, and we used to work together briefly at Product Hunt. What's your background?
So I started using Twitter when I was 16. That's how I met you and ended up working at Product Hunt when I was finishing up senior year of high school. I was lucky to grow up in the Valley, so I had access to so many people that I could meet off of Twitter. Through that, I ended up joining a $300 million early stage VC firm right after high school. and worked there for a little over a year and decided I wanted to try out college, went to Berkeley for a year. During that year, I came up with the idea of Zebra Intelligence, which I'm working on now, given that a lot of entrepreneurs and VCs would always ask me for feedback on products and teen trends and anything teen related, where I was just like, this is an interesting opportunity where I'm in the middle of a bunch of generations and loved connecting the dots. And so through that, I started Zebra Intelligence, which is a two-sided marketplace that connects brands to teens. On the consumer side, fun mobile app that lets teens learn and earn crypto by completing tasks, such as answering questions.
What do you have a name for the token or coin or?
It's going to be Zebra.
Zebra?
So okay. Everything's going to be Zebra. We're going to remove the intelligence.
Not Zoins? Like, I don't know. Sorry. That was bad. We like puns at Product Hunt. We already have a name for our token. It's called Kitty Coin.
Of course.
We don't have a use case for it or a need for it yet.
It meows probably. That's it.
Meows when you get them. I don't know. It's something that we strive to adopt at some point.
But it's going
to
be a $1 billion market cap. Everyone get in now.
Of course. Yeah. ICO tomorrow. And so you obviously, you kind of straddle two different worlds to some extent. Both of you are 21 years old. And Tiffany, especially you, you've, you know, been working in the space of technology and startups for a while also giving people an insight into like Gen Z and, you know, how they're different or how they use technology differently. So maybe it might be kind of fun to do some myth busting because I think most people listening, there's certainly a lot of Gen Z people listening, I'm sure, but probably most are a little bit older, I would guess, late 20s to early 40s is my assumption. Let's educate the people, or educate me rather, because I'm 31. I'm old. What's the biggest misconception as it relates to technology for the Gen Z kind of demographic?
So I think there's two big ones. One of them is the fact that a lot of people think Gen Z has short attention spans because we grew up on social media and you just see any kind of teen on their phone and they're swiping really fast and liking really fast and viewing things and using their phone at a 10x pace than millennials or Gen X. And so I think if you think about it, teens do binge watch Netflix and can sit on couches for hours watching shows, but that's because the content is good. And I think a lot of content out there is really terrible, which means the bar is really high for kind of what teens are expecting if they are expecting really high quality content, like on Netflix, for example. And I think the second one is the fact that everyone loves saying Gen Z is lazy, but they say that for every generation.
Yeah. It's true.
And I like calling this generation the side hustler generation because nothing like stops us from starting a company at whatever age, given the internet. And so world is our oyster. We can kind of build whatever we want and meet whoever we want just through the internet, like how I met most people through Twitter. And so I think that's obviously a big misconception. I have a lot of friends who just are in high school, maybe have dropped out of high school to start maybe a meme company or parody accounts or whatever it is.
And Drake, you left USC. Was it to start Splish or did you start it during school?
I started it during school, yeah. We started about a year ago now. In the creative space in general, it was more on the AR side of things. Pivoted a little bit towards this kind of photo editor side. And that's partially out of the same kind of side hustle insight that we see in teens is that they want to take that next step and build something on their own. And the tools right now don't give them access to do that. And so we're giving more creativity to that generation. And so they go on and use that in more impactful ways.
You're an engineer by, I guess, trade.
Yeah.
And how did you learn to code and what age did you get started?
So on the side hustle topic as well, in high school, I started a little company of my own. High school me saw that school dances and sporting events were just not run very well. We would sell paper tickets. You know where the story is going. So what I founded was a web app that would scan student IDs, keep track of all the money, do the transactions through our own payment processor. And so I started that sophomore, junior year of high school, and that kind of opened the door for me to learn how to code.
That's cool. How did it go?
It went pretty well. I sold to a few schools in the area. What it more taught me is just kind of like the easiest part about a product, in my opinion, is the idea. And then the implementation actually getting to work is the challenge, of course. I learned a lot about school contracts and sales cycles that I probably didn't even know as a 16-year-old. But it went really well. And then when I went to college, I just kind of stopped pursuing that so I could focus on some other things.
I think I was similar age. I think it was freshman or sophomore year is when I built my first website. And my dream was to make $100,000, which is like my arbitrary goal in selling emails and selling like banner ads.
Selling emails.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I think maybe gray hat. Like people were opting into giving their email, okay. But they were also opting into other people's newsletters.
Interesting.
I can't remember if I disclosed it very clearly.
Yeah.
But
GDPR sounds like.
Yeah.
This is a scheme.
The European Union is listening.
So long story short, OperationLaugh.com, I called it. It was hideous. It was a bunch of HTML pages. I don't even know if I had used CSS. I don't think I even knew how.
Just style tags right there.
And when I wanted to change the background, I had to individually go into each page and change like the body background color. Anyway, I made $70 and then shut it down because it took a lot of time. But I learned a lot. I didn't hit my $100,000 goal, but learned a ton. So I've noticed a lot of, it feels like I see a lot more and more young people building products, and a lot of them are like little side hustles or just experiments like Chrome extensions or mobile apps. I wish I had data on this, but it feels like there's more interest in kind of becoming a maker and building things on the internet. Do you see that too, or what is your kind of perception of that movement?
I think you guys have definitely helped with that, where a lot of teens are able to see other kids shipping things on Product Hunt, which is obviously huge because then you can see someone across the world who's like 13 or 14, who's shipping things, and you're like, oh, I can do the same. If a kid in the middle of nowhere can do it, then probably so can you. And so, I mean, I got my start in building a company or working on a project when I was, 15, and also sophomore, junior year seems to be the trend here. And so I started like an online lifestyle magazine focused on music, fashion, and tech. And the goal is just to get, like, it was for fun and to get like free things. And so I got lots of backstage passes to concerts and music festivals. Oh, it's really fun.
As a 15-year-old?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
As a 15, 16-year-old. And then I was like, oh, this isn't that fun. I'm going to go like recruit people to go write and review concerts in exchange for free backstage passes. And so I had 30, 40 people from all across the country, from 14-year-olds to 35-year-olds who had no idea I was a 15-year-old kid, because you can be a dog on the internet and no one will know.
And great meme reference.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was just all through email, and I would just give people like free clothes and all these things. I probably got like thousands of dollars of worth of clothes just from that website, where I was like, we are a media company.
And what did you use to build the website?
I used WordPress.
WordPress, okay.
And I just edited the theme and learn some basic HTML and CSS.
My process was always guess and check. It's like, look at
100%.
W3 schools and
that is what I did.
Stack Overflow, and then guess and check until it works. Yeah, because I don't think you and I, Tiffany, you and I aren't engineers. You know, we can hack our way around it, but yeah.
Luckily, we have smart engineering friends.
Yes, yes, much smarter.
Like Drake.
Friends. Let's talk about what the kids are using nowadays. I feel like such an old man asking these questions.
What the kids are using. What are the kids?
Yeah.
This is like a meme.
I know. What are the kids using nowadays? So like what's on your home screen that no one knows about?
An app called Out of Tune, which is like HQ for music. It's super fun.
That's crowdsourced? Like is there a host and
there's
people
a host.
Sing along? What does that look like?
No one sings along. It's a host. They DJ songs, but it's out of tune. And so you have to guess what song that is. So you can't like Shazam it or anything. Also, you wouldn't have enough time. And then you have to guess out of four songs which it is.
So they play it in a different tune?
Yeah.
So, oh, interesting.
And then,
not the words.
They play the words for the first few songs. And then like the last song, the 10th question, is just like a beat. You have to guess, which is really hard. And it's tied to an artist or a song name. It's really fun though.
I haven't seen that.
You should play it. There's another app called Surprise, which is super fun. And it's just a game. They do daily drops for Yeezy, Supremes, like exclusive stuff. Drake's best friend started it.
Yeah?
Not this Drake.
Wrong one.
Famous Drake.
Yeah, the
sorry,
I was
going
to say the real.
Sorry.
I was going to say the real Drake.
Sorry. I said the famous Drake. This one's also famous, an influencer.
Yes.
But... Well,
What about on your home screen? Is there an app or
Drake's also from Canada, so might be the same.
Oh, that's the hard part is that I am Canadian. I was born in LA. It's hardly real. I am a Canadian citizen, but that's the funny anecdote there.
You guys are like twins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait for them to produce a song
Someday
together.
We'll meet and it'll be...
BFFs forever. Love it. Is there an app on your home screen that you're a fan of?
Well, the younger age range in high school still uses that people kind of dismiss since the acquisition is TBH. I don't know. You might have to pass... like back me up on that, but like when I talk to juniors and seniors in high school, they think it's like a little bit younger of an audience. And then when you talk to the younger high school people, it sounds like they're still using it and using it pretty often.
Interesting.
Which isn't really like a secret one, but it's, I think, underestimated that it's still around. It was kind of a big media hype a year ago.
Tech media hype, yeah. Which doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, it resulted in, was $100 million rumored acquisition? Yeah, I'm curious to see what their numbers are now, because it certainly follows a model of, it's a game at the end of the day. And yes, it's with your friends, but games, rarely do they last very long. Like, very few games do people play longer than 2 months, let alone like 12 months. Yeah, that was a surprising acquisition to me. But $100 million is nothing for Facebook too. So
I was playing with an app yesterday called IRL. They're all over the tech media, tech news, and their design is a lot like TBH. It's like, it's around hanging out with friends spontaneously, like one of those.
I feel like we see a kind of a wave of those every 12 months or so.
Do you remember Gather? The app that spammed everyone?
Oh, yeah. I got so many texts from
that. I don't remember
Gather.
Same CEO built this.
Okay. So maybe it's like game development where you just, because like game studios just do one every quarter or whatever. No, more than, less games than that. But
yeah. Well, it's like a studio model. So I used to work in gaming. This is my entry into technology. And we didn't make games, or I wasn't involved in the game production side, but got to know a lot of game developers, and just like everything from indie one-man game shops to like big companies like Glu Mobile and things. And mobile gaming at that time in 2010 to 2013 was on the rise and exploding. And Facebook gaming, you know, was transitioning. Everyone was transitioning from Facebook games once they like cut off all the viral kind of like growth hacks. Everyone was going to mobile. And yeah, the kind of model of gaming is interesting as it applies to maybe like a consumer tech social product, because a lot of the similar dynamics exist in both products at the end of the day. But some of them aren't actually like labeled as games, yet they kind of are. Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat, like all of them have game elements and mechanics as well.
Everything's gamified now.
Yeah, and that's such like a buzzword that I feel like a bunch of old guys use. But it's like real. Yeah. It's real. And I think it might go back to the high schoolers making product thing, because you make what you use. And there's kind of this wave of products feeling more like toys instead of full-on utilities or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's just kind of, people want toys, not tools, and it's all connected.
Toys inspire, well, attract interests oftentimes, whereas maybe a tool, you have to have like a burning need for it to want to try it. Whereas if it's a fun thing that all your friends are doing, then maybe I'll try this thing. I think Foursquare could be a good example of that. In the beginning, the check-in kind of movement and wave was something that attracted people to check in, and that was sort of the game and the toy. But then the utility is the data that they ended up collecting to create now this like marketplace and this tool to be able to find restaurants and anything that you want really around you. It's pretty fascinating how it kind of like started off as just like this little kind of game at South by Southwest. Stick around to the end of this episode for a mini interview with Marian Wu, president of GE Ventures. We talked about how GE Ventures is investing in the future of startups. This podcast is brought to you by Stripe. The best way to know if people like your product is if they'll actually pay for it. But collecting payments on the internet is harder than you might think. Stripe makes it easy for entrepreneurs to turn their ideas into businesses by helping them accept money from anyone, anywhere in the world. So if you're building an internet company and you care about revenue, you should check out Stripe.com. A lot of people are talking about Snapchat. What is your perspective on Snapchat after its stock price has gone down? You know, Facebook, of course, Instagram have copied a lot of their features. What's your perspective on that? And also, have you seen Snapchat within the demographic of Gen Z kind of moving away?
So I think Snapchat and Instagram are both still super relevant for Gen Z. They're probably still spending a ton of time on Snapchat. Wish I had the numbers, but it's just they use it as a messaging product now because they are so used to it and they kind of grew up on it, especially for high schoolers and middle schoolers, where it's just they use that to text their friends instead of iMessage or Facebook Messenger now. But I do think that what Instagram is doing is super, super smart, especially with the new e-commerce stuff. They're going head-to-head with their e-commerce and new products, and it's Instagram going up against YouTube now too with long-form content, as well as, I guess, Musical.ly and Douyin in China with kind of the creative format and creative stories with IGTV.
I think it kind of cements Instagram's place as like polished content though, right? IGTV just kind of pushes them further in that direction. I would be curious how it affects like the whole Finsta, Insta dynamic if you have long form on your Finsta. I don't really know how that's all going to play out, but it's an interesting shift for them.
Finsta, so you have your Instagram account, and that's with your real name, and you share your photos on there, and you have your friends that are following you. But Finstas are short for fake Instagram account or fake Insta.
And at my high school, they called it Sinsta for secret Instagram account.
Sinsta. I like Finsta better. Yeah. Yeah. So they create these second accounts to share other things that they may not want, you know, their parents to see or maybe other people. And so it's sort of like a secret account that is not tied to their name.
Yeah. Well, I have friends who have three levels. They'll have their external one with a few thousand followers. They'll have their like closer friend level one that's like 300 followers, and they'll have like just their best friends. It's like 20 or 30 people.
Yeah.
And so your content gets less and less, you know, explicit as you move out in those rungs. But yeah, it's just because Instagram feels so, you know, polished and there's
you don't have pressure. A Finsta.
I don't have a Finsta. I treat social media in general pretty haphazardly. If you look at my stories, they're pretty crazy. But
they're basically Finsta.
They are basically Finsta, yeah.
Do you have one, Tiffany?
I do. And like,
I don't know about this.
10 people follow it.
I follow it, so.
You follow it.
Well, so I find Finstas fascinating because I have this interest, I guess, in pseudonymous communication and identities on the internet. And when I grew up on the internet, my parents they said, don't use your real name. Like, it's dangerous. And, you know, that's certainly changed. I would, you know, live in IRC and I used to play games like StarCraft and other things. So I'd be talking to all these strangers using my pseudonym, which I actually won't share just because
somebody's going to find an old YouTube account or something.
Yeah, someone might find something on the internet.
I really want to know this now.
I'll tell you offline. And so I used a pseudonym, and that was what I used pretty much everywhere. And then Facebook came around, and that shifted not only me, but most people's kind of understanding and acceptance of using a real name on the internet. Now, most social networks are really, well, I don't want to say most, but Facebook, of course, is all about identity, all about your real name, and for good reason. Instagram generally is about your real name. That's why people are like kind of hacking around the system to create these Finsta accounts. And there isn't all, like, with exception of like old school players like Reddit and, you know, old school forums, most communication for most people is with their real name. And I find an opportunity or an interesting area where how can you create some of the same dynamics of our social networks today, like Twitter, but do it under a different name and different identity. But what are your thoughts in general about pseudonyms on the internet?
Yeah, I think I actually take a tiny bit different of a perspective. I think it's less about real name versus fake name, but rather like the persistence of identity. That sentence sounded like a lot, but I feel like on Instagram, it's hard to like shift how you're viewed. People recognize others by how they act on Instagram. It's like this weird, like you have to conform to that over the whole length of time. And so I think that pressure where you're not able to change how you post is a big factor. And so it's no longer like kind of you go on to create or experiment or anything like that, where kind of Instagram started to say a little bit like the photographers went on as like their day-to-day creative place. And now it's more like, this is your identity, hold it over time. And so I think that's kind of where the Finsta is born out of.
Yeah, I think it's like you get tied to one aesthetic, one brand on Instagram, and you kind of have to maintain that for a certain amount of time. We have one friend who's really good at this. Her name's Ellie, and her Instagram is extremely polished. She just made one filter and adds that filter to everything.
It's beautiful.
To keep it consistent. No,
every picture is the same, like blue, orange, brown, or whoa.
It's very orange.
Pink, orange, brown, tan tone.
Yeah.
So she passes everything through the filter, and so her whole feed to eternity is that same aesthetic. It's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think that, I think Eric Thornburg tweeted about this recently too, about identities and how we should be able to switch kind of our online presence whenever we want. We shouldn't just be tied to one name or one identity. And it also reminds me of like on Twitter, the more followers you get, the more famous you get, the less you're going to feel inclined to tweet stuff or get in debates or whatever it is, because you're going to outrage a lot of people. And it's just like, then you value whether, or you weigh whether it's worth it in your brain on whether you want to tweet something or not. And it's like, he was using the example of Mark Andreessen and why he doesn't feel the need to tweet anymore. He has a brand. He doesn't need to tweet. And I guess the cons outweigh the pros in his mind of people just yelling at him, people trolling him.
Well, with people like Mark too, he has a responsibility to a lot of people. It's not just about him too. It's about his firm. So that's where it gets even more tricky, where it's not about a selfish kind of like, oh, I don't want to get into arguments, but you know, sometimes you have a responsibility to be very, very careful about what you say because it can affect other people and even other people's jobs in those kind of extreme cases. I tweeted something, this is maybe not the best example, but before this recording, we were talking about fake plants. And I shared my love on Twitter for fake plants. And apparently it's pretty controversial. I guess a lot of people don't like fake plants.
I always see you tweet about fake plants versus real plants.
Well, I'm sticking to this one because fake plants are great. They're a wonderful innovation. Don't have to water them. They last basically forever. And you don't have to keep buying them when they die because they don't die. So I'm pro fake plants.
Pro fake plants. What about the like smell of a fake flower? Like it doesn't, it's not as...
You can get some fake Febreze to fix that. I don't know. Basically what I'm getting at is in the future, I think... Well, this is even a broader like conversation about what's real versus fake and does it matter? Because I think a lot of people have this, for some reason, this like emotional reaction to anything that's fake and it's not organic or it's not real or didn't come from nature and so it's bad. And more of our lives are, you know, being shifted and influenced by fake things like technology. Is this fake? Like, is this phone fake? And the digits and the...
Everything is manufactured.
Everything is manufactured.
Like our social media.
Nature, right?
And our lives.
Yeah, that's deep. That's deep. What do you think about Lil Miquela? We've talked a little bit. Maybe, I'm sure Drake, you know about Lil Miquela. I'm sure. Tiffany, we've talked a little bit about her.
I think Drake also knows Trev.
No, not personally, no. But I've not heard her song yet. Didn't Lil Miquela release a song?
It's on SoundCloud.
I haven't listened to it yet. But it's a really interesting like model.
Yeah. Do you want to describe...
It's a CGI influencer. And so she's built like millions of followers on Instagram. How many is it, Tiffany? Do you know?
A little over 1 million.
Okay. Yeah. And she, they full on normal influencer stuff, product placement and ads.
Did a partnership with Outdoor Voices recently.
I saw the billboards in LA.
Gets in fights with other CGI influencers.
Gets hacked.
Gets supposedly hacked.
Fake hacked.
It's really interesting, and I was thinking about this and also was thinking a lot about the crypto space and where things are going to go in the next 5 years, the social media and consumer space. And so I tweeted recently, the future is going to be digital celebrities with selling digital merch and digital collectible.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be a mix of both IRL, or I guess they...
But those aren't real. It's digital.
They can't be real.
Yeah.
They can have IRL merch. But there's going to be so many things on digital. I think it's going to be interesting if Broad ends up doing stuff in the crypto space, which I imagine they would, especially having like Lil Miquela collectibles and a little Lil Miquela branded crypto kitties and whatever it is would be super cool. And I think that's literally like what's going to happen in 5 years.
If you could have your own version of Lil Miquela on Instagram that you control, would you want that? Would you use something like that?
It's interesting, like abstracting the identity one more step from a Finsta into like...
Yeah, yeah.
In theory, you could, right?
Yeah.
Like, you could just go use any of those avatar apps. Or what is Genies?
Oh, you invested in that one that would be like Lil Miquela. Like, everyone can be a Lil Miquela.
Facemoji is...
They just
very
sent
different.
Me their stuff. They were considering...
Yeah, I'd say Facemoji is related in the sense that it's like a digital avatar that is over your face and similar to like Animojis, like replicates your emotions and your eyebrow movements and everything.
What's the one that I always see on Twitter of like...
Morphin. Yeah, which I think is in beta right now. But that's also an interesting example within this like weird world.
It's
of...
It's so weird.
Yeah, of digital kind of avatars and yeah.
I'm not sure if I would want a digital avatar. It just seems not as real, not as authentic. Unless it was a completely different like online presence, like it wasn't just like taking over my current Instagram account.
It seems taxing, maintaining two different personalities.
You've got to outsource that.
Find somebody on Upwork to help you out on managing here.
Yeah, take it one step further.
Find another Gen Z.
It's just not yours. Like at what point is it yours? I don't know.
Yeah.
Find someone at USC.
Yeah.
Another Gen Z to help you out.
Yeah.
So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about Splish. Right now, it seems like a lot of people are, especially investors in the Valley, are not maybe most optimistic about mobile social type products, especially after sort of the big boom about four or five years ago. What is Splish and like why are you building it?
Splish is, you know, mobile photo editor. And so we have more advanced effects. So our most popular one makes a still image move. So you can put in a picture of a beach and it makes it look like the waves are crashing.
I remember seeing that on Product Hunt. I think Tiffany, you posted it.
Yeah, we did a web launch. That was
web version
about 3 months ago. We moved to mobile 2 months ago or so. And then we're also doing what's called live filters. And so the filters move and kind of interact with the actual content of the image. It's pretty fun to watch, a little bit more engaging. It's funny, when marketers put it in their emails and stuff, they get a few higher percent click-through rate and stuff like that, because it really grabs the attention. A lot of the ways we're building the social around it is born out of the same problems. We don't show how many followers you have. We're trying to keep it very much a creative playground so that you can go and experiment creating these types of things, get feedback, but it's not like, you know, I need this many likes. And that kind of thing is kind of the social philosophy behind it.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of Shots from way back. John and Sam, they were building an app that at the time was very similar to Instagram. It was basically focused largely on selfies with eventually they added some filters. But the goal was to create a healthy place for especially kids to share their photos and not be judged. And so they had no follower accounts, no comments. I don't even know if they had any likes at all or any form of that. Maybe at some point
they did. I don't think so, because they wanted to remove the whole like being dependent on social validation or external validation.
Yeah.
And so I love the thesis.
Yeah.
Yeah. The problem is that you need some of those features, right, to keep people
engaged
and happy and consuming. Mm-hmm. And so what we did is we brought in some minimal level of that to keep it still a healthy network, but mm-hmm. we also made sure that the effects we use are always fun and playful.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see some of them feel a little bit more meme-y, like it'll do like zoom effects on your face. It's pretty fun. And we try not to let the effects get too serious. Try to keep it a lighthearted community.
Yeah. Nice.
A lot of parents always ask me about what social media are their kids going to end up using? What do I think about social media addiction and the fact that social media is leading to a really high depression rate? And that's just like relevant to this topic around kind of building consumer products that don't end up making people feel terrible about themselves.
Do you use anything to block websites or limit your use of the internet?
No.
I have a Chrome extension that blocks.
It's like your timeline or something?
No, it limits me to like 30 minutes a day on Twitter, Facebook. Those are the two ones that are blocked.
Yeah. But not on your phone?
I removed Safari from my phone.
Removed Safari? I didn't know that was possible.
But you have some other browser, right?
No, I don't use a browser on my phone.
How do you not browse the internet on your phone?
What happens if you get like a link in your email or... Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could even remove that app.
I want to try that.
It's really cool. You go into settings, you go into restrictions, you remove Safari. Because I spent way too much time looking up stuff on Safari. It's like, I have already maxed out the number of tabs. It's 500.
Jeez.
You actually just can't get through that to close them all. That's just a never-ending list.
Too long, yeah. I think we'll wrap it up there, but what do you guys want to plug?
Splish is in YC for the Summer Y Combinator. So we're up here in Summer 18 batch, down in living in Sunnyvale, which is a... interesting city to live in.
Yeah.
Very excited to move back to LA and get the company settled down in LA for
sure. Yeah.
But yeah, no, working pretty hard on Splish.
Sweet. Awesome.
Yeah. So if you're part of Gen Z, you should ping me or sign up on ZebraIQ.com and earn free crypto.
Zoins. Zoins. I'm going to convince you to name them Zoins.
That sounds terrible, right?
It is really the worst name that I can think of.
I can't imagine that being like in a white paper or something. That's
I can't imagine me saying that out loud.
It's so bad, it's good. All right. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Marian. Thanks for joining us on Product Hunt Radio, and thanks to GE Ventures for making this possible. GE Ventures is investing in the new industrial revolution, and that means Marianne works with all kinds of startups solving under-the-radar business problems.
First off, tell us a little bit more about what you're doing at GE.
I lead the investing team at GE Ventures. It's a really exciting role where we invest in leading startups, and we build a bridge back between those startups to GE to help GE be more innovative.
Is there a particular space or industry that you're really excited about to invest in?
So if you think about what's happened in the last 10 years, We've completely revolutionized commerce, media, communications, finance. But if you look at more physical or operational industries, they're barely touched by technology. So there's massive opportunities to bring that same capability into these more traditional industries.
There's a sort of theme around the unsexy industries.
They're tough industries that have certain dynamics around them, regulatory, for example. They have incumbency effects. So it's hard for a brand new entrepreneur to penetrate those industries. That's, again, how a big company like GE can partner with small companies. We can bring that industry expertise. We can certainly bring credibility. We can bring channels and other support that can help those companies be successful in these industries that are harder to penetrate.
Thanks again, GE Ventures, for making this interview possible. GE Ventures invests in startups that develop transformational technologies to solve big problems. Visit ge.com/ventures to learn more. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, share the podcast with your friends on Twitter and tag a guest you'd like to hear in a future episode. See you soon.